Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PC Gamer podcast. It is January, and we've forgotten the number of the podcast.
January, so podcast will be Alpha 12.
Podcast Alpha 12. I'm Tim Edwards. Regular host Ross Atherton is dead to us. So
he broke the code.
In this
Turned
month,
back on the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this month we've got Steve, gaming's most sarcastic racist.
Yeah,
we probably shouldn't say that.
Craig, news editor.
Hello.
And Tom.
Hello.
Francis.
Yes.
Tom and Francis.
What do you want from me?
I'm a section editor, and I was born in Oxford.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about our latest issue.
Tom, is your microphone? Is that going to work like that? It seems to be pointing towards Tim.
We'll find out when we listen to it.
Well, if I'm in stereo, it's high success. So we talk about the latest issue, some of the stuff in there, but also some of the wicked, crazy, cool, and quite nice things that's happened in the PC gaming community, and what's coming out for the next couple of months, and some fun stuff about the new year.
This is like a table of contents for the podcast.
It is.
You can't actually turn to the bit you want to hear.
It is. If you would like to fast forward, you will come across some of that stuff. Right, shall we start?
What was first?
Should we talk about Dawn of War?
Okay. Don't we do like what's coming out and what's...
Yeah, you're okay, messing with the format again.
Yeah, gentle lead in, man. Okay, well, too intense.
Let's talk a little bit about the games that are coming out in the next couple of weeks.
Don't work.
Can we also talk about one that's already out?
Yeah, sure.
Crayon Physics.
Crayon Physics.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Or Crayon Physics.
Is it good?
Yes, it's really good. I'm playing at the moment. It's basically, there's a whole series of games that get called magic crayon games. This is the one where you actually do have a magic crayon. And so you just draw stuff, and it looks shit, and then when you take the pen off the
then
paper
it falls over.
By releasing the mouse, it falls over.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the exciting pitch.
That's
you draw shit that looks shit, and then it falls over. Yeah. But no,
really selling it.
It made... it's all physics puzzles.
Okay.
You have to solve by drawing things, and you just got to get a ball to touch a star. And most of the time, you just like the ball starts on a platform. The startup starts just hovering in blank space, and you've got to figure out how to get it up there. Which almost always involves making a pivot, then drawing a giant crude hammer that then swings down and tries to like hockey stick the ball into
or a giant boot.
Yeah, and that never ever works.
But it's fun to begin with.
Yeah, it's it is really good fun, and some of the levels are way too easy. Like, or rather, I should say, there are too many easy levels. Because, you know, you expect the first few to be basic, but then, like, 25 levels in, you're still just drawing a line to connect the start to the end, and it works. But then some levels are just, you look at them and think, what?
Is it another kind of big indie classic that we're going to be talking about for the next?
I don't think so. I think it's a big indie idea, and it's it could have been, but it's... I don't think the physics are good enough for it to be a really great physics game. I don't think the levels are... well judged enough for it to be a really compelling straight through experience like Braid and like World of Goo, because some of them are just to connect the dots and a lot of them are too completely the other direction where you can't tell what you're supposed to do, you can't tell what you can do, and then you try a few things and something works kind of by chance and you don't really know what you did.
See, I think it feels like a physics flash game. And that, you know, I don't want to play it for an hour or 2 hours because you run through it. If you pick it up for 5-10 minutes, spend some time with it, and then put it away again.
It's just really relaxing.
Yeah.
Okay. On an entirely different,
but it's great,
massively different note, Saints Row 2.
Saints Row 2, that's basically the same kind of genre. Magic crayon game, only the crayon is a gun and it's not magic.
I think you mean a bum note there, really.
Yeah.
Saints Row 2. I'm going to disagree with the. I'm just going to shut up.
Okay, so Steve hates it.
Yeah.
Why do you hate it?
I think it's boring.
Yeah?
There's millions and millions of things to do, and they're all silly when you describe them or imagine them.
Because Saints Row is like a very kind of coarse GTA clone that...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is.
Their marketing materials play that up, don't they? They take a bit out of GTA saying, oh, you go bowling GTA, but in Saints Row 2, you get in a big sewage tank and spray people with liquid shit.
Yeah, exactly, which is essentially what the marketing department's done. That trailer was genius. I thought it was, but it's the best thing about the game. I mean, you get in a Formula One car, you know, or a go-kart, it sounds brilliant, it sounds ludicrous, but the physics just aren't fun.
Yeah,
they're just sort of floaty. You just sort of nip up to top speed in anything at all very quickly, and then you have an unspectacular crash, you know, or you just sort of sit at top speed. It's very easy to miss things. It's just too dumb.
Because it's funny, because Alex's playing it at the moment, and he is loving it because of all the stuff you've said. It is going to be one of those games that just divides people.
Yeah, perhaps that's it. Perhaps, you know, I like driving games. I like the handling of GTA, you know.
GTA 4 is completely the opposite, isn't it? Where it's really solid, really kind of grounded in reality, and really kind of... It's like a game with loads of inertia. Like, it takes a long time to get going, and when you hit something, you stop immediately, and it takes a long time to get going again. And
but
then when you are going fast, it kind of feels like it means more.
Exactly, and also it generates very spectacular crashes and ragdoll. But Saints Row, for me, never does that. It's too surface. It's too simple, and just not exciting enough when it does go wrong.
Although Steve hasn't played the PC version yet.
No, that is true.
Well, it is going to be the same game, isn't it?
It might have added a bit more weight to it.
More crashes and higher graphics.
Yeah.
Something I've always liked the sound of in Saints Row games, I've never played one, is you can do insurance fraud, can't you? Where you run in front of cars and get yourself hit.
That was in the first game as well.
Right.
And that was its moment of inspiration. that and the fact that if you steal a car in Saints Row, you put it in your garage, it's always in your garage.
Ah, yeah.
If you go out, smash it up, abandon it, you come back, it'll be smashed up in your garage. Which, doesn't make sense in real life, but it means you can actually use the cars you've stored because you won't lose them.
Yeah, GTA 4's hopeless for that, isn't it? You can store one car, and if you take it out and ruin it, then...
Yeah, so you don't take it out. So I've got a Diablo-type thing set in a garage I never take out. It's like real life.
I've got a helicopter
except parked. I haven't really got a Diablo.
I've got a helicopter parked on my... Fifth Avenue apartment.
Yeah, so have I.
Yeah.
I'm never going to use it because just taking off would ruin it. Blades just scrape against the apartment building.
Yeah, I've tried that many times.
It is horrible in that, like for Saints Row 2, you always just end up talking about it in GTA 4. You just kind of wish they'd get open. When they were marketing the original Saints Row, they said, GTA games are a genre now. We're not cloning, we're making a game in the GTA genre.
But used a very similar font.
Yeah.
Yes.
And setting.
Yeah.
But you just wish they'd do their own thing.
Well, I think they're kind of lucky that GTA went more realistic now because they appear to be what people perceive GTA was.
Yeah.
But they're pretending to be completely the opposite way, but in fact they're not, because you go, you can spray people with liquid shit. It's just hilarious. It's much better than bowling. But then they force you to do those things in order to earn respect. Which is the most wretched system ever.
Is that where you get to reassign all your talent points from scratch? That's an RPG joke.
That was the sound of it going over my head. So you're forced to do these increasingly tedious sort of missions that don't end. They just go, you've completed level one, let's do level two. And you just do the same thing, like ad infinitum. And then you open up, you know, get enough respect to do these missions. Not self-respect. Obviously, you're just hosing like people in the street with shit, and it should be funny, but it's not. It's boring.
On the same day, which is the 9th of January, Mirror's Edge comes out.
Woo, Mirror's Edge.
Tom's the only one who has played it.
That's my review.
Actually, isn't 9th of January today?
Yeah.
Okay. Mirror's Edge has just come out.
No,
shortly in the past when you hear this one.
Yeah, Mirror's Edge is already out.
Okay. Yes.
So, ancient classic Mirror's Edge.
Yeah. Did that ever come out?
Let's do a long play on it. So, you've played Mirror's Edge, haven't you, Tom?
Yeah, Mirror's Edge made me do two things. One...
Vomit.
Go downstairs, pick up my enormous TV, put it on my desk and plug it into my PC so I can play on widescreen, because if you have a 4x3 monitor, it will just letterbox it horribly. To the extent where it's cutting off a third, I think, of the total viewing area. So it's almost unplayable on a normal size 4x3 monitor. And also start using the C word regularly. It's just a whole new level of frustration. There's something about the way the combat works that when you get it wrong, you're just absolutely apoplectic with rage. Strikes at the very core of your being. What the fuck? How the hell was I supposed to do that?
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
So it's
an absolutely brilliant game.
Is combat the C word?
It's,
combat!
The combat is, it's supposed to, well,
is it
so,
bad actually,
so the game is you're a free running girl running across the top of skyscrapers
in a sparklingly clean futuristic city, kind of a police state sort of atmosphere where there is no crime except you guys, and you're just runners who are delivering data between very vaguely defined people.
I always knew the joggers would get it in the end.
Hearing that, I kind of assumed that that would be in some way part of the game, but it's not. That's just the backstory. As soon as it starts, your job's over, you're not doing that anymore. But yeah, the bits of combat, there isn't that much combat compared to, you know, a normal action game where they feel the need to have you mow down hundreds of enemies. But they kind of gave the impression, whether intentionally or not, that the combat would be kind of optional, like you could just sprint past it all and, you know, just do the free running stuff. And that's not at all the case. There's loads of sticking points where there's virtually no way past the enemies without fighting them. And there's an achievement for getting through the game without shooting anyone, and that is possible.
Okay.
But to be honest, that's even more frustrating than shooting them with guns, because shooting them with guns at least gets the combat over.
Does it have a boss fight?
Yeah, it has a couple of boss fights. They're not too bad. They're only frustrating because the combat system is just incredibly frustrating. You have to press a button at a certain, at a very precise time to grab someone's weapon.
Right.
And you can go to slow-mo to do that, which makes it easy enough, but the detection for what direction you have to be facing when you do that and exactly when you press it is just completely erratic. So sometimes you do exactly the same thing twice. One time it will work perfectly, and the other time you'll just... Every time you fail, you do like a ridiculous kind of groping animation. Okay. And you're stuck there for like a second, and you die within a second. So okay. It's just...
It sounds like a kind of admirable failure, to be honest.
Admiral Failure is an awesome name.
I am Admiral Failure. And I have a good feeling about this battle. You're actually to call it a failure, because I absolutely love it. And those moments of frustration are intense, but they're few.
Okay.
And the rest of the time, you're sprinting across the city with just this amazing sense of momentum. When you know, just running along and turning slightly feels completely different to any other game, because you're accelerating all the time, you're moving forwards. Every time you encounter an obstacle, the way you deal with it affects your current speed. So if you slide under some pipes, then you've lost a bit of speed because of the friction. Whereas if you kind of jump before you get to them so that you're just vaulting over them, you actually accelerate from that momentum. And there's so much, like, it's definitely a game that the second time through you absolutely love it.
Okay.
Because then when you run into enemies, you know where you've got to go, so you can skip them a lot of the time.
So you should buy a second-hand copy then.
Yes.
That'll make it better.
If you can, like, mind meld with the person who played it first.
Transfer their memories. Being stupid.
So, Admiral Success, then.
Admiral Moderate Success. And also, it's absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Okay.
I mean, I know I was playing it on a 32-inch TV, like a 6 inches from my face, but the art style is absolutely beautiful.
Okay, on the 16th of January, Lord of the Rings Conquest.
Wait for a review.
Yeah.
What happened on the 17th?
The Lord of the Ring... The Lord took his ring back.
Right.
Okay. Wow, that was
rubbish. That was rubbish, wasn't it? Okay.
God.
Men of War is meant to be out on the 13th of February, but don't expect it to be out.
Worst title ever.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Fear 2, also on the 13th of February.
Fear 2.
And we're advising people to wait for a review of that as well, I think.
Hmm.
It may be a little bit disappointing.
Well, now you've spoiled it. I was being enigmatic. Maybe they should wait for the review because it would be so good.
Yeah. No. Yeah, let's move on. So, talking about the new issue, Dawn of War 2.
Dawn of War 2, yes, I did.
What do you think of it?
It's really, really good, but really, really good is not really the standard that Dawn of War has been operating at until now. I mean, Dawn of War 1, when it came out, was absolutely phenomenal. And as I'm sure you know, they've completely departed wildly from the normal strategy elements. So there's no base building, no resources, you're just four squads, that's it. And you level up between missions, you find loot from bosses, and it's essentially a kind of a strategy RPG.
Do you know why they've done that?
Because they're bored. They list their complaints with RTSs and they say that, you know, players don't feel like they're rewarded enough for their missions, and it's kind of dispiriting to have to start your base from scratch every time you start a mission.
Which is true.
To me, though, the main reason to get rid of that stuff is it's just ridiculous. It's just a hangover from June when, you know, harvesting spice. You know, spice was kind of part of war, and it was something you do harvest in the battlefield in order to get ahead. And because June 2 really kind of set out most of those mechanics? Yeah.
Which June
and everything's 2, been copying
but
that.
But the drag box was from the original Command & Conquer.
Excellent. But the drag box isn't really the absurd part of RTS. No. it's harvesting stuff in the field.
Yes.
Relic like to say that Space Marines don't chop wood, which is true.
That's a short story in the making. But it's,
so basically they've taken a huge risk and, you know, made a really brave experiment to see if they can completely change what a strategy game is and, you know, make a new kind of game that kind of sits between those genres. And they haven't really succeeded in convincing me that that's better than what they have before.
You see, the interesting thing is that I know Craig and Steve would never play a normal RTS game. It'd be me and you who are playing them. You don't particularly like what they've done for some of the stuff in the single player game, but I reckon that what they've done lets Craig and Steve enjoy that kind of game.
Well, I'm not sure about Steve. I don't know about Craig, but I was watching Steve play Red Alert 3, and when I played Red Alert 3 as a big RTS fan, I thought the tutorial was brilliant because it was really funny and it kind of had this levity to it.
Yeah,
and
it was great.
I watched Steve play the same tutorial and thought, that's a terrible tutorial.
I thought the video was great.
Because, Steve, you don't play many RTS games, that would be fair to say.
No, I don't. That would be entirely fair.
It keeps telling
a lot
you...
more fair than calling me a racist.
Racist RTS hater, Steve Williams.
Sarcastic racist RTS hater.
I've decided to love all of the people all of the time this week. Until they all let me
I'll
down
I'll try
again.
And summarise this point because it's getting dangerously tangential. But basically...
I'm trying to put you off.
It keeps telling you you've got to press F now to activate the special mode, and then some of the special modes are fire mode, some of them are actions that happen instantaneously. And Dawn of War 2 is all about that stuff. It's all about pressing, you know, that you have the hotkeys are like Q, E, F, G, H, I, and all of those you have to use. You can't just muddle through clicking on, you know, the icons at the right time.
Craig shakes his head.
So it's very, very much about
micromanagement. I just need a mouse to click and direction keys, and that's me.
Yeah, Red Alert, from my point of view, in which the Jedi are evil, obviously, is a lot of little icons and lots of tiny icons within the little panels and things you've got to click on, and oh no, you haven't clicked this yet, and it feels more like learning to me.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't do book learning.
See, the problem I have with those games is whenever I start, I always expect the first button I need to press to be up on the top left, and it's not, it's somewhere in the middle somewhere. Just do this and this, and I'm like, well, I'm lost now.
When when we get some copies in, because we'll try and get some THQ, will you play it and see what you think of it?
No,
I'll play TF2 instead. Yeah. Right. I could try, but you just upset me.
Okay,
I tried. Defense.
Well, my theory is that it won't appeal to RTS RTS skeptics, and Tim's theory is that it will.
Yes,
I tried a tower defense game that's on Steam for 5 minutes when I was on holiday.
Was that Defense Grid?
Yeah, and I just went nah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did see you. I watched you playing Dawn of War quite a lot, and it looked like ordering four people to go and crouch behind another layer of barrels quite a lot and shoot what was in
barrels.
Front.
It's hard to deny.
So yeah,
they didn't look that compelling.
I tried to make a really big deal of the cover system and I just don't buy it. And I know Dan from PC Gaming US, who's reviewing it at the same time as me, had the same feeling that the cover system, I mean, it doesn't make much sense because it's like there's some barrels and the areas in front of and behind those count as cover, and so when you're moving towards them you see your cursor goes yellow to say this is okay cover or green to say it's good cover, but it doesn't care whether you're in front or behind, so you can just kind of cluster near stuff and that makes you in cover even though you actually haven't obstructed the line of sight at all. And also it just doesn't have that big effect, like everything goes around cover, so every unit has some kind of ability that is really good against units that are in cover. And it just, I don't know, they keep pimping, I keep kind of bigging up how big a deal that is, and I just didn't find that in practice.
On the upside, though, is the co-op works. And
yeah,
really,
co-op's
really
beautiful.
Good.
I mean, like I say, it's very much about controlling every ability all your units have at all times, so you've got to be really sharp on it. You know, as soon as Thaddeus' assault jump is recharged, you've got to be using it, otherwise you're kind of slacking. And in co-op, it's exactly the same game, only you're controlling two squads instead of four, so it's even more small scale.
Yeah.
And what I found
is... There seems to be less for you to think about, and you're more able to actually just enjoy what you're doing.
It's kind of less for you to think about because you just can't coordinate a really good like four-squad mixed tactic assault because you don't know what the other guy's going to do. Like, every time we have had a plan that we thought, okay, you throw a grenade over there and then I'll slightly
lost.
Like, I suppose every now and then it does work, but most of the time we end up grenading each other or an artillery strike comes down just as the other guy's charged in. Because all the abilities...
When they're Benny Hill music, is it?
You tell you... You
it
tell
is
your,
literally like that.
With all the abilities, you tell like your tactical marines to throw a grenade, and they'll move into position, stop, think about it a while, get a grenade out, then throw the grenade, and then the grenade flies through the air, and then it lands, and then there's a timer, and then it blows up. And at no stage during that can you stop the process. So no. You do that, and then like 3 seconds into the process, you see your friends' assault marines have jumped down to the exact spot to take out the center
process. Hi, there's a grenade there, let's go and get it.
And your friend has seen the grenade as he's just told his assault guys to jump, and they're locked into their animation too, so both of you are just watching in horror as these two things collide. But on the plus side, because you've got so much less to worry about, you've got so many fewer controls.
Yeah, times in full flow down.
Just have to get back to that point because we digressed from it for ages. Co-op is better because you've got less to think about.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, if you're controlling two or four squads of elite crack space marines on crack or whatever it is them crack.
Planet crack.
Why are you telling one of them to throw a grenade who then thinks about it for 4 minutes? it seems like absurd sort of level of micromanagement. This is what I can't get on with, is the amount of faffing around basically you have to do with them. It's not a battle that you're coordinating. It seems like you're nannying idiots.
Like you are everyone in the squad basically.
So at any point you're in just direct control of one person's actions, you know? Because I mean, the problem I have with these games is that I need to be on direct control. I need to have a button that I press that makes someone's head explode. It's not like a button. He walks over it.
It's click on the squad, click on the sniper ability, click on the enemy, then he does the shot.
Yeah, exactly. Click on and install.
There are certain levels of abstraction there.
Okay, maybe my theory is complete fail.
I think it's an interesting point, though, that there could be an RTS where you're not saying who does what, you're just saying what you want to happen. Just saying, that guy needs to die right now, and his head blows up.
If I was a general, that's what I'd be expecting to do. So generally, I suppose that's why they call them general.
Generally,
I want you guys to go over there. Generally be over there, and generally don't die in the middle.
It is
general vague.
That's what I'd like to
that
play.
That stuff is being worked on in some like fairly hardcore war games. I think it might be the Mosby series, but I'm not sure. So don't take my 100% word for it. But in one of those games, your orders have to be dispatched by courier to where your armies are.
Oh, fine.
And they will basically try and follow them to the best of your ability. So essentially you have to have... There's a certain order lag in terms of everything getting there.
Oh, right.
And, you know, they're people. They're not just kind of robots that will do your every bidding. And you have to kind of take that into account. But that's never going to find its way down into Red Alert 5.
That seemed almost more removed from kind of being...
But if you're playing the role of a general in a strategy game, that's the stuff that you'd...
Yeah, that certainly appeals more to me, like guiding the overall tactical battle, trying to sort of do pincer movements or flanking or that kind of level
of Bill to fire and then Jeff to fire.
I don't want to tell them to chop wood or you know, gather resources or
unless wood's attacking you and you won't get access.
Start mining for spice.
Yeah, ordered by Triant, you're in trouble.
Exactly.
Can't tell them to chop wood. Space Marines can't
chop
wood.
Why are they mining spice? They're just making cinnamon. I want them to shoot people's faces off.
Implicit in your request, I think, is the notion that these guys will behave intelligently of their own accord, and I haven't seen that be achieved by anyone who's been trying to do that yet.
No, but if you had it on a large enough scale, large enough groups of people, it could just be a sort of computer dice throw, how many, what percentage die, how many...
Although, even dice can horribly let you down.
Well, yeah, that's
you
what...
You don't play Dice Wars, it's just...
You don't play dice on the battlefield.
The actual battles in the Total War games are fairly kind of hands-off. Once you've made the decisions, you're not going to tell... Because it's done in groups of about 800 people, you say, go over there, march, cannon fire, cavalry charge, and then you can kind of micromanage them if you want, but really it's basically hands-off at that point.
That sounds much better. And
but then if you really want to enjoy it, you've got to go for the whole kind of grand strategy campaign to...
Right. They should also have a sense of self-preservation. You shouldn't ever have to order someone to defend themselves or start shooting back at the man standing right in front of them, who's shooting them in the face.
And in RTS is where you do have a base. I still haven't played one where if your guys are standing around like the barracks that they just came out of and the enemy attacks the barracks and, you know, they can see it happening, but they're not within firing range, they just will not fire. They just don't understand what's happening. They'll just stand there and watch it.
So... A possible recommendation, you think, for Dawn of War, or possible recommendation by the magazine to read the review to get more on Tom's things and then possibly decide to
I think Dawn of War 2 is brilliant. It's incredibly satisfying. All these tactics that you are, you know, ultra micromanaging are so, you know, kind of forceful and just fun. And it's beautifully designed and just really kind of tactile, immediate, impactful fun. But it's not for people who don't like micromanagement in RTS. It's kind of, it, I feel like it, I don't know if they're trying to do this, but what they've managed to do is capture the feeling of being a pro gamer for a minute. So, you know, if you've seen an actual competitive match of Warcraft 3 or something, they're flicking the screen around crazy and they're controlling like 19 different units at once. You're not doing that here, but you're doing, you're thinking on the level they are, or you're thinking about the kinds of things they are. So you, like, the outcome is just dependent on when you choose to jump your assault marines behind the squad, how you lure people into your setup guns and that kind of stuff, rather than how many units you built before you go into battle.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the other stuff in the magazine? We've done a piece on the PC of 2010, which is kind of all about the tech that's coming to the PC very shortly.
It's got stuff in it.
It's got some stuff in it. But I'm kind of really excited about some of the stuff in Windows 7, weirdly, particularly the support for touchscreens, because I think the PC is going to go under kind of quite a massive change in the next 2 or 3 years. With the introduction of touchscreens to pretty much every device.
There's a Asus at CES just a couple of weeks, actually this week, showed a self-contained PC and a keyboard that has a touchscreen on the side of it rather than a numpad.
Isn't that brilliant?
It's bonkers. And apparently the idea is you can take it and just hook it up to any monitor and just go rather than, I think the touchscreen acts as a mouse at their point.
If you think the trackpads on laptops are shit, really, they're horrible things to use, and you know, you can't really game on them. But the thought of playing something like Dawn of War and being able to just kind of drag a box on screen around something and order them off, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Well, Windows have been trying to do it for years and years and years now.
Yeah.
But they've got to wait for a big hardware change.
The other thing is 3D. The NVIDIA stuff that was announced today.
It's actually out today.
3D, proper 3D game. Like 3D glasses. Not just like
goggles. 3D. Again, it's goggles. It's,
the goggles that
virtual reality,
The goggles will do something in 2010.
Oh, God, can you imagine all the peripheral goggles you'll be able to buy?
It's quite exciting. Ridiculous
styles.
Because there's stuff in NVIDIA's drivers now that if you get the right kind of goggles to wear, which is essentially just the filter stuff, you can turn any game into 3D.
Mm-hmm. That's the plan for this stuff. It's the goggles. I think it's Mitsubishi, maybe something like that. But again, reports from CES are saying that they were playing Left 4 Dead and they were shooting the gun, and the smoke curling from the gun just felt like it was coming towards them.
Isn't that so cool?
It doesn't work very well for World of Warcraft, but for immediate action games like that, the distance of World of Warcraft is very difficult to work. But for stuff that's in your face, it's apparently really
awesome. It's not that brilliant for like Football Manager either.
Yeah. It's got a 3D match engine.
I really feel like this is a totally flat spreadsheet.
I played Call of Duty on something like that in GDC, and it was amazing. Absolutely terrifying. The problem with it then was that to make it happen, you had to be rendering the picture twice for every frame. So you essentially needed double the kind of graphics horsepower to make it work. I don't really know what their issues are now, whether they've kind of come around with it.
It kind of makes sense, to be honest, that it would take twice the... Because you're just rendering separately for two eyes, aren't you?
Yeah. I don't know how it works, but I think the raw horsepower of 3D cards now.
It is insane, the amount of power that's in our PCs that is just kind of sitting there for most of the time.
I was reading a online
Vista's using it.
Comparison where some guys got the Quad GT 9X, I think it's the new NVIDIA card, and they put four in the machine, and they're getting like 300 frames per second in fear.
I would really like that in my PC.
Yeah, it takes 700 watts to run, though.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
That's equivalent to what? If a light bulb?
A light bulb's what? 60 watts? 60 watts.
It's more than a light bulb.
Normal one. Yeah.
But for a much smaller amount of light.
Yeah.
Bizarrely. That's sad, isn't it?
Quite a lot of heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Other things in the new issue is we've got some news about the latest Red Alert expansion. See, bit of an RTS thing. Rather than necessarily talking about why it's going to be good, we should talk about what's in it that's incredible. And the two things are Holly Valance and
a giant robotic samurai head that may be some kind of building or warship.
best game ever, basically.
Don't really know. There are also giant robotic samurais, I think, with swords. Not as giant.
That's true.
But, is it single player only, this expansion?
There's a mini campaign for every race, or every race in Red Alerts. I feel really bad calling them race. Like, because essentially...
You are a racist.
Yeah. It is a bit of a weird thing to kind of say.
Saying Japanese are a race and the Allies are a race.
Yeah. I can understand if you call like the Protoss and the Zerg a race, but...
I think faction is more appropriate because the Allies are America and Britain and, you know, well, the Allies.
Okay, for every faction.
Do you see World War II as a war of the races?
No!
I see it very much as a melting pot. With a lot of people melting.
Okay, but there's also a kind of mini campaign that explains the origin of the Japanese.
It's really good. I'd just like to interject at this point. So
what, World
cool.
War II?
No, having a, like, just tiny little campaigns for each of the races. I wish Dawn of War II had done
factions.
That. Oh, sorry. I was thinking of Dawn of War II, in which they factions. Really are races. Because Dawn of War II is just the Space Marine campaign, and it is endless. It took God knows how many hours to complete, and it's a bit repetitive, so it doesn't need to be that long. And I just wish they'd made, like, you know, a kind of four-hour campaign for each of the four races.
Tom, maybe the first person in the world to have completed Dawn of War 2.
I think Dan, Peter Game US, was. I think he beat me to it.
Don't. They're not beating us again.
Not taking into account the time lag between the States and here.
That's true.
I don't think that makes a difference.
Well,
it was more like him messaging me to say, oh, have you got to the end yet? And then saying, can I spoil it for you?
Red Alert 3, the expansion's called Uprising. It's possibly going to be download only. One of the things they
On Steam or EA Store? That'll be interesting.
That's a good question.
I wonder what's happened with the EA Store.
Yeah. Well, all the games are on Steam now. Everywhere but in the UK. Which is just madness.
Don't we have it?
They're all on our Steam press accounts.
Our Ultra Magic Super Secret.
Yeah. Which.
We vowed never to tell anyone about.
Yeah. But they're still not available in the UK.
Yeah, but those press accounts, they're like Film 4. And when you haven't got it, every time you flick through, all the films look amazing. You think, oh, God, why?
That's true.
When you finally get it, it's just, oh, I've seen that. That sounds boring.
There's a lot of pop cap on there.
There's a lot of stuff on those press accounts. It's just like...
It's like Penguin City or Penguin Adventures.
Penguin Arena.
Yeah.
But even so,
you bastard, you maybe play
that. Those games.
Even for a cheerful, Christmassy, snow-themed game, it's a lot of penguins on an iceberg fighting, and you're trying to knock each other off the iceberg. Yeah. And it's all themed around global warming. It's the only iceberg left in the sea. The tribes on
cheerful.
It are fighting to the death to kill the other cheerful little penguins. Yeah. So it's horrific, sort of genocidal massacre with snowballs, and you're just trying to bounce them off because it's slippery, unless you're wearing bear claw pickups. But
do they die when they fall in the water?
They probably freeze to death.
You
won't let them back on, so they will slowly drown and freeze at the same time.
Surely they can do that thing where they just leap back on like a kind of bird-shaped torpedo.
Yeah, but they always do that in huge groups, don't they?
That's true.
I don't know.
Do you think they can't
that.
Do it unless they have friends nearby?
Penguins are essentially show-offs.
It's like a buff.
I'd rather drown.
They are essentially show-offs, and they can't... I'm talking gibberish.
Yeah.
But it's really horrible. It should be fun. It's not fun. It's got tiny, tiny little hitbox on each penguin, and there's a really slow reload for snowballs. And you're just like pathetically flippering snowballs at people, and all of a sudden you find yourself flying backwards at 60 miles an hour into the ocean, and just.
So what was the game?
Penguins Arena.
Penguins Arena.
Mm. Okay. They're not even arenas. They're icebergs.
Surely arena implies some kind of wall around the end.
Yeah, sort of bowl. Yeah, these are the opposite of bowls.
Yeah. Hills.
Yeah, hills. Bergs.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really reaching here. It's terrible. Pipe Mania, much better.
Yeah, what?
No. I reviewed Pipe Mania for the same massive review. It's on the cover, people.
Yeah. It's that kind of story. You spoiled it a little bit there for you.
Yeah, sorry. It's an exclusive. I'm just going to tell you about Pipe Mania. It's
on,
a really, really old game. It's very good. They tried to hype it up. They put wretched little manga characters in there and stupid music and really, really crap things. But if you play a few of them, you can unlock the classic mode, which is the proper Pipe Mania, which is good.
Shouldn't you just play Bioshock, though?
I have to say, it did look like Bioshock's hacking minigame was actually better than the whole of Pipe Mania.
Hacking minigame is good, but Pipe Mania, you can't choose what piece you're going to use. You just have to use the one that comes down.
It's like Tetris. It's got like a queue.
And so you join the two things up, which you can usually do quite quickly before the tap opens and all the gunk comes out. But the longer and more convoluted you make your pipe, the more you score. And it's very, very simple, very easy. Just put a tile down. And it's really addictive when you play a game in 2 minutes, you know, 1 minute. It'd be one game. It's very,
I can't
very
believe easy we're devoting time to the podcast.
It's fantastic.
I have more to
also
say.
Also, play Funky Truck 4x4. That is also very,
in the,
very
in good. The non, hang on, we're not done with Pipe Mania yet. In the non-classic mode, is it not true that the guy who like guides you through the tutorial and tells you how to do everything suddenly picks up a hammer and starts smashing up all your pipes?
Yeah, but only because he's a massive jerk. It's incredibly annoying. In the new sort of swirly updated mode, it's you know,
we fucked
they've up. Obviously decided you've got no attention span, you don't really want to be playing anyway, they're just going to do anything to keep your attention. So yeah, they start smashing up so your pipes are leaking and you have to repair things while you're building them, and there's a timer and there's a leak meter and there's...
Sounds like a rather complex plumbing simulation.
It's a rather complex plumbing simulation. It says that on the box. it's rubbish. It's bad, but yeah, like I say, it's got the original in it. $9.99 from all good stores.
Out now?
What are we doing here?
It is out now. Actually, it's not on. It's not even on Amazon.
Really?
Amazon sell it.
They just get a copy to us and that's it.
Okay.
Mm. Anyway.
Right.
Thanks, Empire.
That's 2009 in games.
Yeah. The other big thing in the mag, aside from Steve's massive Pipe Mania review.
Yeah, it's huge. It's on the cover.
is we've done a feature on what we think are the 50 greatest developers, comma, ever.
Full stop. Full stop.
New paragraph.
Begin speaking.
Grammar bot is happy. I was going to ask you guys, who would you consider the greatest developer, comma, ever? Full stop.
Question mark.
I'd have to say our Lord Jesus.
That was God, actually.
Didn't he develop?
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah. But God, no, God was
Jesus was just an NPC.
God was the creator. Jesus was the developer. He turned us into what we are today.
So
God was the publisher.
God is the publisher.
God is... I'm not sure what he is.
Does God own the IP rights?
Well, let's face it, doesn't exist, no. So who cares?
I think the Bible is the publisher.
Oh, God. God.
The disciples are the publisher because they kind of, you know, right. Actually released his works, okay, to the world.
So Judas was the PR, then.
That would explain
a lot. The cross thing just a publicity stunt?
No.
No.
Lord was party.
And his resurrection was the sequel.
Yeah, that's true. No, Jesus so DLC.
The Jesus inning.
Yeah. It's taking longer than Duke Nukem, though, isn't it?
We're talking about the 50 greatest developers.
It's a real shame you don't edit podcasts. And
yeah, no.
Ever. So, Steve, who's the best developer?
The best developer, yep, in my opinion.
I can sarcastic
see
opinion.
Stalling tactics engaged. Cogs whirring.
Warthog. For their work on Richard Burns Rally.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah. Have you ever met any of them?
I met a guy who did a lot of the physics work, right. And he was a very nice person and incredibly intelligent and frighteningly dedicated. I think he frightened the entire Subaru team with his requests for information that they actually had to then forward to the manufacturers in Japan and like tire manufacturers and that to find out the answers. They're very, very, very thorough.
Are Warthogs still around?
No, I don't think they are, to be honest.
Okay.
I did read something and I've forgotten it. No, I think it all went a bit wrong.
Okay. That's a shame though, because Rich Burns is still kind of alive and kicking and...
Not in a real sense.
God, no.
Richard Burns Rally.
Yes.
Oh, sorry,
you could have chosen your words a little bit better.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah, it's still a brilliant game. Still, yeah, totally worth playing, and has some of the most amazing fan-made content I've ever seen.
Okay.
Just better cars than the developers managed. Because although they did astonishing work on the physics and the Batic engine, they didn't really have the time to make Tim stop laughing.
He's laughing silently.
I'm surrounded by racists.
Stop being sarcastic.
Yeah, they didn't really have the time to, or the licenses, in fact, to make the cars particularly accurate, and some of the tracks were a little bit not that great. Some were absolute classics, I have to say.
Greg?
Valve, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. They just make the games I want to play, really. Not...
Yeah.
There hasn't one that's come out that I haven't adored, so...
Yeah. That's churchy. Because even something like Day Defeats Horsefield...
Yep.
Still.
I spent a lot of time playing that a couple of years ago. Like, yeah. We had 6 months playing that, nothing else online.
Not so much Counter-Strike, though.
I played that a lot, but, you know, they keep on releasing good games I keep on wanting to play.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I mean... I suppose Team Fortress 2 has kind of like grabbed me more than anything there, really. I went back to that even though you guys were playing Grand Theft Auto. I started trying to play TF2 today. Couldn't find a good game, but I wanted to play it.
Okay.
You know, and no, there's no one around playing to play Left 4 Dead, so whenever I want to play something and I don't know what to play, I'll just play TF2.
Pardon?
I think Valve are the smartest developer out there, and they're the only ones who are brilliant and are in control of their brilliance.
Yeah.
Like, they know why their games are good, and they know how to keep making more great games, and it's not going to go wrong anytime soon. Like, they're just the most kind of professional and the most kind of in tune with, you know, what makes a great game. But I guess I'm going to have to say... Well, this is... in our feature, we talk about some people and some studios.
Yeah.
I'd like to pick someone in between that those levels.
Okay.
So the team who made Deus Ex. Because if you say Iron Storm, I can't say Iron Storm is the best developer ever. That's
no.
Reasonable. But I also don't think Warren Spector is the best developer ever, and I don't think he's responsible for Deus Ex's genius. Okay. And in fact, if you look at what happened to the Deus Ex team, they all split off and did their own thing, and almost everything they did was fairly bad. Oh, and I don't think anyone on the team... If you hear them talk about what they made and, you know, what went right and what went wrong and stuff, I mean, Warren Spector will just talk about, you know, how smoothly the development process went and, you know, how he mismanaged people and how he managed people well and that kind of stuff. And if he actually starts talking about, you know, what made the game really good, he doesn't know because he doesn't even think it's that good. He thinks they kind of made a kind of middle of the road, did a bit of everything, but nothing very well kind of game. And, you know, Harvey Smith obviously doesn't know what the hell he's doing or what made Deus Ex great. I don't think any of the team really know what they did. And it was just kind of a sort of alignment of the stars, just everything coming together. Through sometimes through technical limitations, they couldn't do stealth that well. And I think the fact that the stealth is crude is one of the reasons Deus Ex is so brilliant to play, because you can just get away with absurd strategies that would otherwise be impossible. And yeah, just the flashes of brilliance and technical limitations and things going right, things going wrong at exactly the right time and exactly the right way.
Not Bethesda?
No, they can only really make one kind of game that I like. I mean, you know, the Elder Scrolls series is brilliant, but they're kind of just developing one idea. And it's still not really there yet. I mean, Fallout 3 is the best game of last year, but it's not... I'm still waiting for them to kind of... to find out how to mix a main story and the side stories. They still don't really know how to do a good main plot. I think like both Oblivion and Fallout 3 had good main plots, but not... they were just... below the standard of the rest of the game, particularly the Dark Brotherhood missions and some of the best side quests in Fallout 3. And I think one day they will find a way to make their main quest as compelling as that stuff and not, you know, cop out and say, oh, it's got to be, you know, this noble quest to save the world.
It makes me sad slightly that I know we often say that the kind of the early development cycle of most games, like the, you know, the FIFA things and the, you know, that kind of thing, that pisses off a bit. It makes me sad that it's going to be until at least 2010 before we get another Bethesda game, really, because they're just not kind of, they don't have the scale of development that the kind of other guys have. And for me, it's Sid Meier. Over Christmas, I played a lot of Civ 4. I played one of his off games, which was Sid Meier's Railroads, which doesn't have that big a kind of following, and a lot of people just kind of dismiss it because it's not a hardcore railroad running simulation.
I think a lot of people probably dismiss it because it's about railroads.
Yeah.
Yes, but it is an amazingly vicious board game, real-time board game. Really, it's not the kind of business sim that you think it is, and it's not the boring railroad game that you think it is. It's just a kind of quite nasty board game about kind of putting railroads down. Beautifully. Beautiful.
That's the least appealing thing ever.
Yeah.
But even that, which I was speaking to someone at Firaxis, and you're saying that was kind of Sid's game. He just went away in a room for 4 months and basically coded the entire thing from
scratch. I'd like to think there's like lots of clanging noises and sawing noises.
And he just basically kind of went
the old
it.
Steam whistle.
Yeah. Produced it, and the game was there, ready to go, and they just had to put the art in. And what, I just think that's incredible.
What do you think it is that Sid Meier kind of gets about game design that lets him make so many good games?
I think it's the kind of the taking away of the chuff that gets in the way of the reason to play it. If I'm playing, I played quite a bit of the original Railroad Tycoon and some of the sequels as well, because I'm the phenomenally boring. But a lot of that stuff, I never really made decisions about. The making decisions about what I'm transporting is a 15th of what you do in that game. Most of the time, it's putting tracks down, laying signals, turning stuff around. And that stuff is fun, is quite good fun, but it's not as fun as the business stuff that, you know, the kind of the taking over people's company, buying, you know, fucking people over by buying shares in the auctions, that kind of thing. Railroad Tycoon, Sid Meier's Railroads is just about that. And it's, so you'll get an auction and it's 15 seconds of you trying to bid on something. And so every player in the game can say, right, I bid 10,000, 15,000, and it just kind of scales up. And that might be, what you're bidding on might be the very basis of your empire. But the strategy that comes into it, I've been in situations where I really needed to throw all my money at buying up a factory in the centre of kind of my business that was kind of producing different items that I needed. The problem is the AI had noticed this, bid on it, and started an auction on it and started to try and outbid me. I spent all my money in securing this asset, but to do it, I had to sell a load of my shares, which I just to kind of raise the capital to do it. And then the AI just bought out all my shares. that's the basis of an amazing game there.
That
does sound fun.
Speaking of aggressive auctions, Sins of a Solar Empire was...
I was just checking Steve's sarcasm here.
Craig was looking at me sarcastically.
Sins of a Solar Empire kind of got lost in the flurry of great games last year. And in fact, it's got extra content coming out for it.
Okay.
I think some free expansions and some pay-for ones.
Micro expansions.
It had a mechanic in it where there were pirates just roaming the galaxy. There'd be loads of them.
Yeah.
And you'd usually be a kind of like 3 to 5 real factions and just the pirates. And you'd run into pirate systems and they were really nasty early on and just kind of rats later on, because they would you'd outclass them eventually. But they would, every now and then there'd be a pirate raid and they would attack whoever had the biggest bounty on their name. And you can add bounty to anybody's name and anyone can do it. And it's also secret, so you can add bounty to your allies if you want to. But I was playing against the AI most of the time, and if you put bounty on the AI's head, they will look at who has the second highest bounty and put money on their head until it goes up and exceeds them. So they'd put money on my head and I'd put money on their head, and we'd end up spending all our cash on that and be crippled militarily. So I thought about this for a while and then thought, what if I put like 500 on that AI and 1,000 on that AI? Because the one with 1,000 is going to put more bounty on the one with 500, and then he's going to put more bounty on the one with 1,000, and they just keep on going until they're both bankrupt.
And when
one of them gets destroyed by pirates and you spent like just 1,500 credits.
But that is such like a Meier-esque mechanic. I'm going to coin a phrase. The other one that I absolutely love is in Civilization 4, where and Sid Meier wasn't necessarily kind of involved too much in the development of that, but it's still got his name on it, and I kind of, in my head, I want him to be really involved.
He does the tutorial, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Yes, he does.
To spread religion in Civ, they had this kind of really elaborate system of religion would kind of gradually follow roads and the kind of way it would work out, and it would just be a kind of organic thing.
Religion follows roads?
Yeah, well, so the kind of flow of goods and the flow of kind of traffic, and so just, it would
follow... And why are you buying his apples? I've got a little Bible for you. <Yeah. laughs>
Well, so we can stop religion with a red light, is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. But there was ideas that if you were Christian, you'd be good in certain areas, like good at certain things and bad in other things. If you were Buddhist, you'd be good at... They just basically scrapped all of that and turned religion into a system where you produce preachers and they go to... You'd send them to other people's cities and you'd then use them up in that city to put your religion there. Once that religion was there, you'd be able to see what was being built in that city. The idea being that you'd have kind of essentially it's like a spy mechanic.
So preachers are just spies.
Yeah, but also, if you had the holy city for that religion, for every city you spread it to, you would get an income from as well. So they'd just be sending kind of tithes back to your home city.
So sort of evangelist preacher spies.
But it was just like it got to the basis, like quite a cynical basis of religion.
Money. Power.
Money and intelligence.
You made a kind of like a quite sweet point about religion and kind of the way it works and things like that.
Best.
But it was really good fun as well. And it's just, that was just a beautiful system.
It sounds fun. I'm going to have to play some of these games. Yeah. I've been trying to play these city building management games, the open source versions for Graham's.
Download
massive downloads on
Graham's
the cover.
Let's do an order.
And the ones that work, some of them are amazingly good. And it's really fun, and there is something just really, really fun about building a sewer in a virtual world that doesn't exist.
Oh.
I'd also like to give a shout out to the Thief developers.
Yeah.
Looking Glass for Life.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
They're dead, dead.
And finally, can we
you
talk...
killed.
No.
Can we talk a little bit about the PC Gamer community stuff? We've just played Splash Damage at Enemy Territory Quake Wars, which went relatively well, even though Tom and I were consistently bottom every table.
We've got jetpacks, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I still don't know what's going on in that game. So
fetch the data brain.
Stressed and confused, and just I'm playing an infiltrator as well, which is, you know, one of the more complicated classes. Yeah. And I kept just like, I forgot that I had a spy drone for most of it, and then towards the end I suddenly realized, oh, I can dress up as enemies. It's actually like the spy class. I completely forgot about that. And
does he have a sort of thing he launches as well?
Yeah, it does. He's got a drone and it blows up, and you can.
That's the spy drone, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
It's crazy powerful. Yeah. It's just like, it's something that usually you have to have some big disadvantage to, but in Enemy Territory Quake Wars, you've got infinite ammo for it. Just there's a cooldown timer on it.
Yeah,
you can just hide in, you know, some absurd cranny where no one can ever find you, and this thing's got enormous range. It's almost impossible to detect, you know, when for other players to shoot it out of the air. And it kills anyone in one hit.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's just absolutely ridiculous. There's nothing to stop you just camping indefinitely.
Yeah. I was talking to one of the Enemy Territory developers afterwards, because we'd been arranging to him. And I said to him, your game is mad. What happened? And he just kind of very quietly said, it does foam at the mouth a little bit. So that was really good fun. The World of Warcraft Guild is doing very well. And by the time this podcast comes out, we'll have 200 members, which is very exciting. We've just run an event, a live event, which involved Ross, some homosexual bears, and
a lot of olive oil.
And a lot of olive oil. And we gave out surprises.
So Ross is a homosexual bear, or
no? Ross has. It doesn't. It was cool if you were there.
Okay.
It doesn't kind of bear.
And if you were there, it was cool.
Yeah.
Or you weren't there.
The Warhammer Guild is starting to recover a bit after the. server move. They're up to 50 members, and they're kind of recruiting at the moment. So if you want to go onto the forum and you want to kind of play with them, just go nuts. Finally, on January the 30th, we're going to be playing TF2 from 4:30 p.m. So come and meet us in the Steam community chat.
Also, on our community note, the PC Gamer Sportcast is doing very well. Up to 35,000 subscribers now.
Woohoo!
Unless it has been recently deleted. I checked yesterday.
Did you do it again, Tom?
It seemed to be okay yesterday, but I got an email from this morning saying, so what happened to the PC Games Forecast?
Oh, God.
So I hope they haven't deleted
Someone's just fucking with us there, aren't they?
Can Maxis fix their shit?
As a little bit of background, the PC Games Forecast was deleted a few months ago, and Maxis did restore it in the end, but it was slightly alarming for a little while.
Okay.
Well, that's the second thing. We've had our Steam group deleted once.
Yes, it is.
As well.
Everyone hates PC Gamer. I think it's because we just like break their system with our extraordinary. Yeah.
We're the 41st.
I think that's true on these podcasts.
Yeah,
we are the most popular podcast in the world. Yep.
We're the 41st more popular Steam group as well. I counted today.
Also, if you are bored and you just want someone to talk to, there's the Steam community chat.
Yes, they're very welcoming.
Yeah, which they
just,
all
just run in and say, "What's the password, please?"
But there's usually about 30 odd guys in there looking for
an evening.
For the Steam community chat, is that you can now stop Steam from flashing the fucking window every time someone says anything at all ever. It's in just Steam settings. But for ages, I wouldn't go in Steam community chat just because I didn't want to hear every single thing everyone has to say the whole time. I wanted to keep it minimized. It just flashes again and again. Someone say something. Someone say something. Tom, someone say something. Look at this. Look at this.
Finally, over Christmas, the forum exploded. For everyone who's stuck with us, thank you very much. We're trying to sort it, and we are very, very sorry for all the problems that are happening. That's enough on that note.
Very well.
Okay. And I think that is basically it. Next month, Ross will be resurrected, possibly.
We ate him. Yeah. It's time to come clean. We just killed him.
Just ate him. and we'll probably be talking about Empire Total War.
Whee!
Right.
Say something sarcastic before we go, Steve.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, that's it. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
That's okay, Tim.
No, stop hitting me, Tim. No, stop it.
Can you unlock the cage now?
Put your trousers back on, man.
We're going to have to listen to this one before it goes out, aren't we? Yes. You never know when it might cut off.
Is it cutting off now? Hang on. Beep.
Giant cocks.